Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Cash and Carry Kitchens. We design, craft and install beautiful kitchens. cashandcarrykitchens.ie.
Email todaycb at rte.ie.
It's something we do every day, often without realising it, whether it's persuading your kids to get dressed, agreeing on dinner plans with your partner, or navigating your way into a pay rise. We are all negotiating all the time. Chris Voss is a former FBI hostage negotiator, and in his book, Never Split the Difference, Negotiating as If Your Life Depended on It, he shares the tools that helped him navigate life or death situations and how we can use them in everyday life. He joins us now. A very good morning, Chris.
Good morning. Happy to be on. Thanks for having me on.
No, well, thank you very much for taking the call. I'm really enjoying the book. Can we jump straight into an example here, please? Chapter 3, first line. It was 1998 and I was standing in a narrow hallway outside an apartment on the 27th floor of a high rise in Harlem. What happened next?
Well, we were looking for some fugitives that we suspected were inside, and we had come up the stairway and occupied the hall with the SWAT team and the negotiators, and I started talking to an apartment that I initially thought was vacant.
And you kept negotiating to a closed door.
Yeah, I was talking to a door. I was talking to a big plank of wood for quite a while, but they happened to be inside the entire time, and they thought if they remained completely silent that we might magically go away. And we were there for about 6 hours before finally we saw a curtain move. One of the spotters from a building next door saw a curtain move, and I talked to him inside. I said, hey, we just saw a curtain move on the inside. We know you're in there. I've been telling you for 6 hours we're not going anywhere. And eventually they came out. They never said a word when they came out. They finally just came out, followed my instructions slowly, and I felt very good about getting them out of there.
What had you said to make them give themselves up like that?
I think it was a combination of two things. You know, I painted a picture to them of that they were going to be treated with respect, unharmed. I described in minute detail how they would come out so that they wouldn't get hurt. You know, I said, you're going to come out with your hands open, and we're going to see your hands, and we're going to see your forearms, and we're going to see your elbows, and we're going to see your shoulders, just describing it to them so they had a very vivid picture in their head of coming out very slowly and coming out safely, not being hurt, being treated with respect. And then I kept telling them over and over again that we weren't going to leave. We just weren't going away. And talking to them for 6 hours, they finally believed that we wouldn't go away.
And adding in that, I guess right now you're probably pretty scared about what will happen to you if you choose to open the door and come out, deploying a little bit of kind of consideration or empathy for their situation.
Yeah, that's exactly it. And I apologize for leaving that out. They were afraid they were going to get hurt. And instead of telling them not to be afraid, I told them I knew they were afraid. And that makes a big difference when you talk to somebody about what their fears are. They resonate with you when you say, I know it's true, as opposed to I don't want it to be true. So I described what they were afraid of.
So how do I translate that then into everyday life? Telling the person that I'm trying to negotiate with that I know how they feel.
Yeah, well, you know, most of the time you do know how they feel, except you can't say that. You got to tell them how you think they feel. If you think you're in a business negotiation and you think they're going to react like you're grabbing with both hands or you're being greedy, you can say, look, I know you feel like I'm being greedy here. I know you feel like I'm wasting your time. It's your gut instinct, and most of us have a pretty good gut instinct for what the other side's actually feeling. The key difference is don't tell them not to feel it. Tell them that you know that they do feel it. It's a tiny change that makes all the difference.
Walking a couple of miles in their shoes before putting out your own demands. Is that what you mean?
Yeah, it's pretty close to it. You know, what does it feel like to walk in their shoes and then tell them what it felt like?
Give me a practical example then of where you've seen this working in negotiations. I mean, outside of hostage or kidnap negotiations.
Yeah, well, most of the time in any business negotiation, or let's say you walk into a store and you want a cheaper price on something. Let's say, you know, they got suits and you want a discount on a suit. If you ask for a discount, you know, they're going to think that you're cheap. So you start out by walking in saying like, hey, you know, I know your suits are fantastic. And if I even ask for a discount, I'm going to seem like a cheap person that doesn't want to pay full price or pay for full value. That's exactly what they're thinking when you ask for a discount. So you say what they're thinking in advance. If you ask for a discount, you're going to seem cheap. Tell them, I know I'm going to seem cheap.
Okay, let's go back to another negotiation. I think it might be the one that you opened the book up with that people will have encountered in day-to-day negotiations, and that is when the person that they're dealing with isn't being exactly truthful. You were found yourself negotiating with a bank robber who was telling you all kinds of lies at the outset.
Yeah, that guy was a very manipulative person, and he thought that by lying to us and deceiving us, he could figure a way out of the bank safely.
What kind of lies was he telling you?
Well, you know, I found out after the fact that he resembled the great CEO negotiator. A good CEO who's really in control of everything will tell you that he's afraid of his board. You know, I got a board of directors; they're going to fire me if I don't. If I make a deal that's a bad deal, CEO says that he's really in charge. So this bank robber on the inside. He said, you know, all these other bank robbers in here with me. I mean, there's seven of them, and I'm scared of them. I think they're going to hurt me, and if I do the wrong thing in here, I got to worry about what they're going to do to me before I worry about you guys. And in point of fact, he was in charge.
That's quite smart, isn't it? Because it throws you completely off your game.
It really did. Early on, it really, really threw us off. We initially diagnosed him as potentially an inadequate personality, afraid to make a decision, which was exactly the illusion he wanted to paint with us so that we wouldn't put a lot of pressure on him or he didn't have to worry about maybe the sniper would shoot him. You know, if we thought he was a threat, the sniper might shoot him through a window. So he made himself look powerless, which actually protected him.
Because the exact reverse was actually the case. He was very much in charge. In fact, so much in charge that his co-conspirators had been sort of bullied or tricked into robbing the bank with him.
Yeah, he was a very manipulative guy. He lied to them about why they were going to the bank in the first place. They thought they were just going to rob the cash machine on the outside of the bank. And he walked them inside the bank and they took hostages. They were, you know, they were physically brutalized and intimidated the two bank tellers on the inside and a security guard. So everybody was caught off guard by everything mm-hmm. that guy did.
But the life skill that you take away from that one is keep somebody talking for as long as possible. You gather as much information as possible and the truth will reveal itself.
Yeah, you know, that's actually it. That's as long as you talk to them, And listen to them. You got to actually listen to them, not just keep them talking. You don't listen to argue with them. You show them that you're hearing them. And the longer they talk, the better feel you have for them. And the more likely it is that they're going to actually tell you the truth.
You know, one of the fascinating things about listening to people is that I've learned in this job, particularly where we're able to record a conversation and you go back and you edit it, there's so much that you're not hearing the first yeah. time around. That must be really difficult for you in a live hostage situation.
And that's exactly the point and why a lot of the skills are really about getting the other person to repeat themselves without... Yeah, we're afraid to ask somebody to repeat themselves because we're going to make it sound like we're not listening. So you want to get them to repeat themselves. You mirror them, you paraphrase them because you're going back over the information because you do want to listen. And as soon as you could do that, you don't get embarrassed about missing something. The chances that you're going to hear more the second or third time around, where the other person feels like you're really interested, you really want to know, okay. And they'll keep talking.
That's interesting because that's a trick that we use in this business. If you don't want to say openly to somebody, expand on that or tell me more, you just mirror a few words in their last sentence and inevitably they'll end up expanding and telling you a whole lot more, which is the kind of the trick that you're trying to use there to get more information.
Yeah, that's true. And what I like about you saying that is anybody that really studies good communication, they eventually learn this stuff, and you clearly have.
Well, you flatter me unnecessarily there because it's a fairly old trick in this book, but it's interesting to hear how you think then that should be deployed in conversation with an employer.
Well, yeah, you want to know how the employer sees you and sees your future. And one of the first things, you know, somebody you work for wants to know is, first of all, do you actually listen to them? And secondly, are you going to follow the direction that you're given? So if you're mirroring and repeating to them, the employer is going to feel listened to. They're going to feel like you're paying attention, which is sort of the first step in helping you develop your career, maybe giving you a raise, maybe giving you more responsibilities. If they don't feel like you're listening, they can't give you more responsibilities.
Can't give you more responsibilities.
Yeah, exactly.
See what I did there.
Yeah, you did that. I like that. And, you know, and every time somebody mirrors me, when they did it with the tone of voice that you just did, which was, you know, I heard you, I'm interested, I'm fascinated by it. The tone of voice on that is as important as the mirror itself. And you were clearly tracking and encouraging me to go on. Okay. So you did that really well.
Is tone of voice important when dealing with a hostage taker, with a kidnapper?
You know, my colleague Derek likes to use the phrase that your tone sets the tone. So absolutely. Your tone should indicate one of two things. Either that you comprehended what the person just said, or that you're curious about what they just said. Yeah. Either way, you have to have listened. And if you have a flat tone, then the other person doesn't know whether you comprehended it or are curious about it. So, yeah, tone makes all the difference in the world.
Absolutely, because so much of communication is nonverbal. It's a really, really entertaining read. And might also teach you a few little handy tricks. Chris Voss's Never Split the Difference, Negotiating as If Your Life Depended on It is published by Penguin. Chris Voss, thank you very much for talking to us this morning.